This is the Lubetkin on Communications podcast for Tuesday, February 2nd, 2016. Welcome to the Lubetkin on Communications podcast. I'm Steve Lubetkin, your host, Podcast Steve on Twitter. This program is about communications, public relations, and journalism, and we speak with interesting personalities in those fields. For more than 40 years, Chuck Darrow covered the Philadelphia Atlantic City entertainment scene for the Philadelphia Daily News and other newspapers. Chuck began his award-winning career at Temple University at the Temple News, the student-run newspaper at Temple University. His first byline there ever was atop his own weekly rock music column. And by the time he left the Temple News, he'd served as entertainment editor, features editor, and editor-in-chief. Chuck recently left the Daily News and is launching a new career starting February 2nd, this very day that we're launching this podcast interview. He'll be doing a weekly radio show on WWDB AM 860 in Philadelphia. We spoke with Chuck about his career and about his new venture on the radio show in this podcast interview we recorded a couple of weeks ago. Chuck Darrow, it's a real pleasure to have you here on the podcast.
And it is a pleasure to be here.
Chuck, you've been in the business for almost 40 years or 40 plus. How did you get started? What made you think journalism was a place to be?
It starts when I was a kid. My dad... started out as a sports writer at the Temple University News. He actually covered, among other things, the first, when Temple won the NIT tournament in 1938, maybe, which was, there was no NCAA. So the NIT was the NCAA tournament at the time. And in 35, Temple went to the first Sugar Bowl and he covered that. And I grew up listening to his stories of being a sports writer, Temple News. Now, he got, before he met my mom, he got, came down with some illness, which he never really talked about. But when he recovered, he actually had a job lined up at the Brooklyn Eagle or Baltimore. I think he worked one summer at the Brooklyn Eagle, but he had a job lined up in Baltimore, right? A new sports writing job, got sick, was on his back for a couple of months. And when he recovered, he said the desire had left him and he went on to other things. But I grew up hearing his stories and they were pretty cool stories, you know, traveling to California. One of my favorite stories was that at one point, the University of Iowa came to Philadelphia to play Temple in football. And the University of Iowa play-by-play announcer needed someone because they did not have names on their uniforms, in the back of their uniforms at that time. And he needed a spotter, someone who knew the players and the numbers. And my father did it. And that announcer's name was, if memory serves, Ronald Reagan.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that's how Reagan got started broadcasting University of Iowa football. So it was sort of kind of, you know, it seemed like a cool thing. In school as a kid, and even going back to elementary school, math, science was never, were never a big one for me. Writing, I was always the one thing I was always very good at was writing. And then there were a couple of other things. And when I was, I think I was about 8 years old, I will never forget this. You didn't grow up in this area.
I did not.
Okay. Back in the 60s, there was a guy named Dr. Charles Lee. I don't think he was a medical doctor. He was sort of a fine arts critic and movie critic on what was then WCAU radio.
I actually have heard of him.
And I'll never forget this. I was driving in the car down the Benjamin Franklin Parkway towards City Hall. I was, must have been 7, 8, 9 years old, back of the back seat with my parents in the front seat. And he came on to do a movie review. And I remember my mother saying, "How would you like that job?" And I said, "What job?" He goes, "The guy on the radio, he gets paid to go to movies." And I found that kind of filed it away. A couple years later, I got very sick, had a burst appendix and some post-operative issues that kept me in the hospital for pretty much the entire month of May 1966. And I got a lot of presents, obviously. And one of them was a kid's biography of John F. Kennedy. And when Kennedy first got out of the Navy in 45, before he went into politics and ran for Congress in 46, his father, who was a friend of Hearst, William Randolph Hearst, got him a job as a correspondent covering the early meetings of what became the United Nations. And I'll never forget the line in the book that Kennedy found that a press pass was like a front row seat to history. And that stayed with me. And then finally, what clinched it was in the late 60s, very early 70s, was when the Philadelphia newspapers, and I was always a newspaper reader. I was a big music fan even then. And there was the local papers, including the Daily News Inquirer and then the Bulletin as well, hired their first generation of rock music writers. And I'm reading these guys and I'm thinking, wait a second, let me see if I can understand this. These guys get free concert tickets, free albums, and get paid to get free concert tickets and free albums. Yeah, that could work. And having been the sports editor of the Temple News, I knew all along it wasn't like today. There was I had no options. Temple was where I was going. That was decided from the time I could probably walk. So if I was,
you couldn't go anywhere.
No, I was going to go to Temple. There was never any, you know, options or safety schools or anything. I'm going to Temple, but I knew about the Temple News. So my first day on campus, my orientation, the summer before freshman year, I went right up to the Temple News, and I got lucky because I wanted to be wanted to write about music. I was not interested. I never wanted to be, you know, Woodward and Bernstein or anything. It's not my thing. I was always kind of in the showbiz. And it just so happened that the Temple News music writer had graduated the previous June and the entertainment editor had not yet replaced him. And he said, fine, you want to write about music? Fine, you're the music writer. So my first byline was my own column with a picture and everything. That was my first ever byline. And
that sets up a high expectations for how it's going to be when you get out of school.
I guess, right. Yeah, well, I figured it was, well, is this all it takes? That's cool. You know, I got this covered then. But the story is, or the joke is that the editor was a returned Vietnam vet. So he was a little older, maybe 24, 25. And he was a real, what we would call a stoner. Not that he got high all the time, but he had that sort of laid back, hey man, personality. And somebody else at the paper said, how in the world can you give a freshman who's never published anything his own column? And his response was, hey man, 22 inches a week is 22 inches a week. Meaning that was 22 inches of copy that he knew he didn't have to worry about filling on the entertainment page that day because I would have a column that long. And that's how I got into it. And, you know, kind of just, I mean, you know, it took off from there. And in March of 1980, I was hired. Well, I started. So it was in February of 1980, the Philadelphia Journal, which was a great, fun tabloid for 4 years from December 77, December 81 in Philadelphia, making Philadelphia at the time, the last ever at this point, with four paid circulation daily newspapers. Obviously, New York has Metro or AM New York, which is like a Metro kind of thing. But Philadelphia was the last North American city, I believe, and certainly American city, to have four, you know, for profit and paid circulation daily newspapers. And they hired me at age 23 as the music writer.
And you went on from there to some of the more mainstream publications in the market.
Well, yeah. So what happened was that the journal folded in December of 81, did really nothing until the summer of 82, where local listeners will remember Robert Hazard and the Heroes, and Robert Hazard to the audience at large who may not have remember Robert as a singer-songwriter from the early 80s. Robert wrote a song that you've probably heard, and most people have, Once or Twice Girls Just Want to Have Fun. And that's my one real rock and roll history story, because I picked Cyndi Lauper up the first time she came to Philly to visit Robert. And I had a show for her from her friend's house in Delaware County to Robert's apartment in Center City.
And I'm sure he was pretty grateful that you did.
Well, yes, because Robert, you know, made it just unbelievable how it goes beyond the popularity of that song, you know, the actual recorded music. There was like, you know, Girls Just Want to Have Fun toothpaste in Japan and Girls Just Want to Have Fun pantyhose in Germany. And Robert owned 100% of those rights. So yeah, Robert was very happy. My car, you know, had I gotten in an accident, everything would have been different. So, and then Robert, so from mid 82, 83, I was Robert's road manager. And then he went to LA to record his RCA album. And that didn't need a road manager because he wasn't on the road. And in the summer of 83, I met at a concert. I went to a concert of a mutual friend of ours who was writing music for the Trenton Times. Randy Alexander, took me to see David Bowie, oddly enough, because we're recording this, you know, a couple of days after the news broke of his death. And I saw Mike Klein, who today is the food expert, the foodie columnist at Philly.com, the Inquirer and Daily News website. And I knew him from the Temple News. And he told me he was the entertainment editor at the Courier Post in Cherry Hill. And I kind of missed writing. And I said, hey, you guys ever do any freelance stuff? And he said, sure, I'll introduce it to my editor. And we met and I got some assignments. And then because I got married in December of 83, I needed a real job. In January of 84, I got a PR job in Philadelphia and was doing that. I said, a real job. But I was freelancing, including the music column. At the Courier Post, and finally in June of 85, May of 85, the entertainment editor said, look, I can't hire you full time on staff, but I can give you enough work that you can make a real salary just writing for us. And I spent 23 years at the Courier Post doing music, television, cable TV. I did a cable TV column when, you know, at the beginning, maybe it was like 1990 or something, I think, is when I started that. Covered local TV and radio. So I was a movie critic. I used to go to LA for the network press tours. And then the big thing was in about 86, 87, end of 86, early 87, they asked me if I would be interested in writing a weekly casino column about Atlantic City. And that's kind of was my brand, the casino guy and that's why in 2008, the publisher of the Courier Post became the publisher of the Daily News. And he said, we got to get you over there. And I was hired to ostensibly to cover the casinos for the Daily News. Ultimately, I ended. But
now, the Daily News and the Inquirer have gone through some pretty tumultuous times in the last couple of years. And you and many of the other writers for the papers have found their way outside looking in.
Yeah, it was, a numbers game. I know it wasn't personal. And, the irony is, because it was all about the union and seniority, because my salary was on the low end of the scale. And they didn't want to get rid of someone like me. They wanted to get rid of the people who were making two and maybe three times what I was making because they had been there for 30, 40 years. But they couldn't because they were protected by the union contract. So I was, I was a victim. Yeah.
And in the past couple of days, we've also had the announcement of Jerry Lenfest taking the newspaper and putting it into a sort of a quasi nonprofit structure.
I'm not smart enough to figure out exactly how that works because it's a nonprofit, but it's not. It is, it's for profit, but it's a non. It's sort of like Chinatown. She's my sister. She's my daughter. She's my sister.
It's really hard to figure out. What is the solution for the print?
I don't think there. I don't believe that there is. I hate to say it. I hate to hear me say it, but the problem is that there are now there will be shortly multiple generations of Americans, and this probably stands globally, who just expect if they want news and information, they aren't expected to pay for it. And I blame that squarely. The fault lies at the feet of the newspaper industry. I don't know who the first genius to say it was, but this when I have this discussion with people, I go, well, what happened? Why, and this is the analogy I use. What kind of car do you drive, Steve?
I drive a Toyota.
Okay, great. Doesn't matter. Okay, but you're happy with your Toyota.
Very happy.
Okay, I'm your salesman. I sold you that Toyota and you love it so much, but it was 4, 5, 6 years ago. You're ready to get in a new one. You call me up and you say, Chuck, I'm ready for I love it. I'm ready for a new one. And I say, great, Steve, here's your choice. You can come to the store and I can sell you a Toyota, or hey, I can just drive one to your house and give it to you for nothing. When the history of American capitalism is written, that has to go down as the stupidest decision of all time in industry.
Giving away the news on the web.
It's not giving away the news. That's specific. It's giving away for free that which you sold for 200 years. Where is the logic in that? If at the very beginning, the first time any newspaper went online with its own website, if they had asked for $5 a week to be able to access, people would have said, well, that's $1 a day less if it's a 7-day week. Yeah, that's okay. I have no problem with that. And I think everything would have been fine. But the knuckleheads of knuckleheads said, no, let's just put everything online. Let people read it. Because they mistakenly thought that they would get all these eyeballs, which they do. The numbers that apparently that PMN, which is Daily News Inquirer and Philly.com get now online at Philly.com are very strong and apparently getting stronger. But here's the issue, and the problem is that for whatever reason, advertisers don't trust online. They know that everybody's looking at it, but they're not willing to pay the same nowhere near. They're basically willing to pay 10 cents on the dollar. I mean, you know, generally, not exactly, but you get what I'm saying, for advertising online rather that they would have paid for in print. And that can't be reconciled because there was so much overhead in print, starting obviously salaries, which is the main one in any business, but the cost of newsprint, of production, of delivery, of fixing the delivery trucks when they break down, all those things that they just can't make a go of it right now. And that's the challenge for the industry going forward. How do we keep being the watchdogs of a community and providing information that truly the community needs to thrive, or at least exist, if we can't afford it? I'm not smart enough to answer that question, but I have a feeling that had they simply just started making people pay from 1999 on, we wouldn't be having this conversation and I'd be at work at the Daily News as we speak.
It's challenging, and even though we've seen a little bit of an uptick, some of the research suggests that people are reading a little bit more print, not a lot, but a little bit more. And vinyl records are coming back in some way, but it's coming back in a very
not the way it's never going to be the industry it was 35 years ago.
Correct.
But that's what newsprint. And another real problem is that, as you probably are aware, that during the latter part of the 20th century, year in and year out, there was no industry in America that generated the kind of profit margins that the newspaper industry did. If General Motors, year in and year out for decades, had to say 4 or 5% growth every year in revenue, stockholders would be holding parades, correct?
Correct.
The news industry from about 1965, let's say, I'm not an expert on this, so don't quote me, but roughly the 60s, mid to late 60s through the end of the 90s, the year-to-year profit increase was generally about 20%, which is unheard of in American industry. And Wall Street got so addicted to that, that's where the cuts come in, because how can we keep 20%? Profit margins. Well, start by firing people.
And a lot of the disintermediation happened with the rise of the internet, unquestionably, putting the news out for free. Then the classifieds went away. Craigslist.
Right. That was something where the newspaper industry was an absolute victim, innocent victim. This guy, whoever, Craig, whatever, if that's really his name. Yeah, a brilliant idea, but the amount of the percentage of revenue generated year in and year out by classified ads for newspapers was staggering. You know, tens of millions of dollars, when $10 million was a lot of money. If you look at any newspaper today, pretty much, whereas there used to be an entire maybe 10, 12, well, not 10, but 12, 16-page section of classified ads, at best it's 4 pages now. Sure. So that's the whole Craigslist thing it wasn't the cause. I think if they had people trained to pay for online news and information, I think it could have withstood the Craigslist issue. But combined with the free people, and again, I have two kids, two millennials, the concept of paying for news it doesn't make any sense, like paying for air. Why would you do that?
It's alien to them. They've never had the experience. Right. So you're in a situation that a lot of us baby boomers have found ourselves in, which is having to reinvent, and maybe expectedly or unexpectedly, what's the next chapter for Chuck?
Well, there are multiple, hopefully. I mean, right now I ain't making a nickel. I mean, but that I hope to change that very shortly. Writing will always be, again, I can't imagine not writing, but after 40 years, as I said, I really don't miss the job as much as I miss the byline. I miss the prestige of being that guy, who gets in all the shows and blah, 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 and whose opinions some people may actually think are important. But the actual nuts and bolts of being a newspaper reporter, I don't miss it anywhere near. For a perfect example, I would have been busting my hump all day Monday on the David Bowie story. And, I thought, how nice that I don't have to bust my hump on that story today. because I've written those stories for so many other rock stars. It's kind of the same story. Of course, the names change. But, you know, again, been there after 40 years. I don't know how many bylines. I know it's somewhere between 10 and 15,000 bylines. It's got to be. I don't miss it. So there are a couple things that for a long time I thought, wow, you know what? I may want to try this, but I couldn't. My job prevented me from doing it for various reasons, time being the main one, but also conflict of interest because you can't be in business with entities you cover. That makes sense. To answer your question, short term, I have some freelance writing assignments. I just had a story about a local musician in the January issue of SJ Magazine. And I have a couple of other assignments from them on the books and one from Inside Jersey coming up in the spring, which is Inside Jersey is the monthly glossy magazine published by the Star Ledger. But going forward, I've been there, done that. I think I'm over writing. And so short term, I am hoping and I am planning on February 2nd to launch a weekly program radio show, not internet, though it will be available on the internet, but it will be on good old fashioned old school terrestrial radio, 860 AM WWDB in Philly, which is a Beasley station, a major league chain. As you noted before we hit the air, their studio complex on City Line Avenue is, you know, it's major league, and it's going to be called That Showbiz with Chuck Darrow. And it will be the first, at least in the 40 years that I've been in the media in Philly, the first regularly scheduled radio program weekly start out with that is dedicated to entertainment, both in the market and national. We'll talk, you know, certainly when the Oscars are on, we will have our show will be dedicated to the Oscars that week before the Oscar ceremony like that.
15,000, give or take, bylines over the course of 40 years.
Right, conservatively, easily 10.
Celebrities that you've interviewed, musicians you've interviewed, who impressed you the most, not because of their fame or their talent, but who was the most interesting?
The most intense. I mean, interesting is kind of an amorphous word because it could be interesting. It could be interesting in the fact that they were so uninteresting. Well, that's interesting. A guy like that, he has nothing to say. So let me use the word my favorite celebrities to interview. That answer always starts with a guy I like to call Joe Piscopo. Before I ever met Joe, which was back in 1985, when he was, I used to watch him on Saturday Night Live and think to myself, this guy is the most talented guy in show business. I was just a huge fan of his. Met him first and interviewed him maybe three or four times between 1985 and 90. And then in 90 through, just because that's the way life works and, you know, things happen, I became his creative partner, writing TV show pilots and movie scripts and mostly writing stuff for his nightclub act, for his live act. And he is one of my dearest friends. I love him like a brother. No question asked. My girls grew up knowing him as Uncle Joe. So Joe Piscopo, absolutely. And not only is he the only celebrity who I have a real relationship with, I mean, a true, you know, relationship, but he's pretty much the only one I've ever met. And there have been, I don't know if there've been thousands, but there've been hundreds and hundreds of people. I will go back. Like when I moved a couple of years ago, I was going through boxes and like, I'm kind of a pack rack. So I have a lot of clips and all. And I looked through this and there were interviews I did. I have no recollection of people. I have no recollection of interviewing. That said, so that's personal. And I just had this conversation like last night, I think yesterday, something like that. Yeah, last night at dinner, right, with a group of people. They asked me the same question, and the answer is Mary Martin, who, of course, played Peter Pan. I was at the Journal. I was 24, 25 at the time. She was probably in her early to mid-60s at the time. I did not – she had a show on PBS for older people, and she was doing a promotional tour. She came to Philly. She had a suite at the old Ben Franklin Hotel at 9th and Chestnut. And I went to interview her, and I did not want to leave that suite. She was so warm and so engaging and welcoming and I'm nurturing. I don't know if that's the right word because I don't think that was the case. But I just had a connection with this woman. It was like I felt so bad because I was too old for her to adopt and too young for her to marry. But I said I wanted to spend the rest of my life with Mary Martin because she was just such a wonderful personality.
What about celebrities you wish you had interviewed? Who would be on the list?
Well, I mean, celebrities from history or just over the 40 years.
Contemporary people.
Who? David Bowie. I got to ask him a couple of questions, but I never got to sit down and really, you know, have a discussion with him. So I think probably David Bowie would be one. Wow, that's, you know, that's a great question. That's one that's never been asked. Who didn't love? Because I pretty much interviewed everybody, or at least had a chance to ask a few questions. And who there? I'm sure there are a couple of actors that I really enjoy. Tom Hanks, probably. I'm a big Tom Hanks fan, so I probably would have loved to have sat down with him. One more in the scene, again, in the realm of music. Who didn't I interview? I probably would like to hang with Keith Richards. Yeah, probably.
And now we see things on Facebook saying, you know, you have to think about what kind of a world we're going to be leaving for Keith Richards.
Right, exactly. Well, my favorite meme I saw recently was, for every cigarette you smoke, God gives Keith Richards 10 minutes of more of life.
It's really true. Chuck, thanks very much for being with us. We appreciate you taking the time.
Jeez. Okay.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Absolutely. Thank
Especially
you so
on
much.
A podcast.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's been a joy.
Chuck Darrow is a former features and entertainment writer for the Philadelphia Daily News. He starts his new radio show on WWDB AM 860 on Tuesday, February 2nd. And that will wrap things up for this edition of the Lubetkin on Communications podcast. We hope you enjoyed the program. If you have comments or suggestions about these programs, please write to us. My email address is steve@lubetkincommunications.com. We produce these programs in the studios of Professional Podcasts, a division of the Lubetkin Media Companies in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, on the web at beingthemedia.com. For everyone at Professional Podcasts and the Lubetkin Media Companies, this is Steve Lubetkin. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.